order this first meeting of the conference committee on Senate File 661. Let's just make sure everybody knows who everybody is. We'll start down here. If you just say your name and where you're
I'm Eric Lem. I'm in research and I'm pinch hitting for Craig Jensen today. I'm covering for Craig.
Chris McCall, legislative assistant to Senator Rest.
Lexi Stengel, Senate Counsel.
Manchin.
I'm just going to go back to there.
Brenda Schaefer, Palinan, Committee Administrator, Senator Rest.
Manchin, representing southeastern Minnesota.
Keith. I have a cold, excuse me, from Cottage Grove.
Ann Rester, New York.
Ryan Winkler from Golden Valley.
Raymond Dean from
Kurt Bell from Zimmerman.
Jim Goldman, Committee Administrator, House of Senate. Paul Trey, Representative, Winter Valley.
Green House, House of Health Research.
Joe Marvel, GOP House Research. So who is Nancy Senator Republican?
We thought we would start today with the
call.
I can't move it. We have to go in board, I'm sorry. We'll be right back.
Higher Ed needs this room at 6, so.
The difference is, and if we need additional explanation, is Mr. Goldsmith here? We can call on him if that's okay.
Yep.
Representative Winkler, okay. You may start.
So, Madam Chair, there are two documents in your packet. One is the side-by-side, and that's the actual comparison statutory language. And then there's also a side-by-side summary that Lexi and I have looked on putting together that has an explanation of which sections are
okay,
identical.
Representative Winkler, is it okay if we just do the side-by-side summary, unless people want to talk about the language?
I think so, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
So, Madam Chair, the first section that has a policy difference between the House and the Senate is on page R2 of the side-by-side, since Senate Section 6 and House Section 5. This is the difference here is the definition of expressly advocating, and on the House language, the express advocacy definition is includes communications that clearly identify candidates or use words of express advocacy. The Senate includes an additional language.
You're going to have to speak louder if you want people in the back row to hear you. Sorry. This is not a very house-like room, which is to say it's pretty low-tech.
So there's a difference in Senate Section 6 and House Section 5 related to the definition of express advocacy.
Okay.
The next,
Madam Chair, Mr. Gehring, that difference is based on the fact that the Senate bill includes the regulation for election communications. Is that what drives that difference?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, that's correct. So a whole lot of the differences in the bill is based on the fact that there's election and communication language in the Senate and not in the House. So point those out as we go through.
Okay. Madam Chair, can I interrupt for a
minute? Ms. Stengel.
There is also on page 2 of the side-by-side summary, Senate Section 5 talks about the definition of election cycle, and that's something the House doesn't have. The Senate breaks the election cycle down into segments. So a House two-year term would always be in an election segment, and the Senate for a four-year term, the first 2 years would be a non-election segment, and the second 2 years would be an election segment. And we'll see throughout the bill that some of the spending limits and those sorts of things are done by election segment in the Senate and not in the House.
And I believe we have a side-by-side comparison document that's in the members' packets that shows the difference between using always a two-year segment or cycle for the House, but for those offices for which there is a four-year term, that will be the biggest distinction in this instance between the House and the Senate bills. This might be useful later when we're trying to understand what happens. Okay, Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, the next section where there's a difference between the House and Senate is Senate Section 18, which is the Senate only provision, which is 610.
it provides another exception for reception meals or meetings. If all of the members of the legislature are invited to the event at least 5 days before, then it doesn't fall under the gift ban.
Madam Chair, the next difference is in Senate Section 23 and House Section 21 on page R9 and R10. This is just a difference that relates back to electronic communication language. In Senate Section 26 and House Section 24, there is a difference in policy. The House increases the allowance for receipt of anonymous contributions from $20 to $50. The Senate does not include that increase. House Section 25 of the R11 side by side provides basically a conforming change to reflect the increase in the anonymous contribution allowance. Senate Section 30 and House Section 29 on page R13 and R14 of the side by side has some policy differences, including references to the Senate language to electionary communications and also a requirement that disclosure of contributions from lobbyists be included in a campaign finance report.
Just to add on to that piece of it, it's any disclosure of any amount, so...
First dollar.
Yep, first dollar.
And that was a...
That was a floor amendment.
That was a floor amendment, yep. Too, and it only applies to lobbyists. It does not... You know, we have the special source contributions other than individuals above a certain amount, lobbyists and PACs. The amendment did not include disclosure of PAC contributions from the first dollar, just the current law was left alone on that, or the relative to the changes being proposed, and it just applies to lobbyists. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senate Section 35 is the substance of the electionary communication section, as the Senate only provision, so...
Sure, I'll go over it very briefly, and if anybody has any questions, we can dig down a little bit more. And perhaps Mr. Goldsmith might be able to shed a little bit more light on this. But the electioneering communication.
In fact, I think I'll just ask him to come to this table too, and he can clarify anything. Thank you, Mr. Goldsmith. Welcome to the Conference Committee.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Gary Goldsmith. I'm the Executive Director of the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board.
Were you going to refer to him on, or just generally, if they're clarifying things?
Whatever you prefer, Madam Chair.
Well, why don't you go ahead, and then if there's anybody has a question, we can get the Campaign Finance Board's thinking and how they arrived at these recommendations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Briefly, the electioneering communication section adds a new category of disclosure, and that's for electioneering communications. And there's a detailed definition about what these are, but the essence is that they are made within a certain amount of time before a primary, 30 days before a primary election,
right. 60 days before
a general election. And that's the only time that this disclosure kicks in. It doesn't prevent or prohibit any type of campaign literature. It just requires disclosure during those time periods if it falls under the category.
And there are a number of things independent of that that it doesn't include. I think that's one of the important things to keep in mind as well. And most importantly, not only the timeline, as I understand it, but those communications have to be explicitly directed toward the constituents in a district for which they are intended, either hand-delivered or mailed. Do I have that right, Mr. Goldsmith?
Oh, excuse me, would you repeat the question?
I was just saying that not only is there the time thing of 30 days before a primary, 60 days before the general election, but among the things that is required within that to trigger the disclosure is it has to be delivered or sent to the constituents in a district for which it, we're talking, like, and that either mailed or hand-delivered and not, if you hand out something somewhere else, that's not an electioneering. Could be even maybe even the same piece, I would think. But if you hand it out at if you hand it out outside of the district or not at somebody's door, and it's not within 30 days of a primary, it's not an electioneering communication triggering disclosure. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair. The bill in its current form is not the same as the bill as introduced, because we had input from quite a few interest groups about the scope of electioneering communications. And one particular concern was that groups often distribute literature at county fairs or churches or caucuses or all sorts of different meetings inside or outside the district. And that this electioneering communications was never intended to target that kind of distribution. So for literature that's distributed, it must be either mailed directly to the resident or distributed directly to the resident, which would mean either a lit drop by hand or through an advertising circular. And then it also includes television and radio advertising, billboards and signs. But for lit, you have to push it to the voter, not have the voter come to you at some meeting and pick it up.
So it's never casual in a sense, in that sense.
That's correct. It's the type of literature that is pushed into the voter's home rather than the voter somehow taking an action to actually want that piece of literature.
Okay. Anything else about that members would like to ask about the rules or the conditions, requirements, exceptions to what an electioneering communication is? It has nothing to do with how much you spend, anything like that. The only thing that is really triggered here is disclosure.
Correct, Madam Chair, and consistent with federal law and federal case law on First Amendment issues, electioneering communications doesn't even require a registration with the board. If you're not already a political committee or fund, you can make these communications and you simply file a statement telling us how much you spent, who you named, and who you pay, where you got the money. So it's the lightest burden of disclosure of any type of communication that could be done in Minnesota.
Any questions, particularly from the House members?
Madam Chair, the House did have this provision in through the Elections Committee, and possibly at one other stop.
And then it was removed.
It was removed. So the House, we certainly are well aware of it.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Gehring, do you want to continue?
Madam Chair, the next section that has the difference between the House and Senate is Senate Section 38 and House Section 36 on page R22. The difference here is just the Senate's inclusion of electioneering communications references.
Okay.
Senate Section 41 and House Section 39 of page R24 have a couple of policy differences that are fairly substantial. One is the Senate's inclusion of a two-year election segment provision related to spending limits. The House doesn't include those election segment portions that the House just refers to the full election cycle. And additionally, in these sections, there are differences between the House and the Senate. Expenditure limits will be allowed. Both the House and the Senate increase those limits, but in different amounts.
Okay, maybe Ms. Dangle, you could go to the charts here and just point out the differences so that members understand whether it's just a doubling to get within a cycle, or what is the difference, particularly for non-House members, for having a two-year segment rather than a four-year cycle?
Thank you, Madam Chair. But if it's all right with you, I'd defer to Gary.
Okay.
Okay, Gary.
Madam Chair, members, thank you.
Mr. Goldsmith, sorry.
I will. Excuse
me.
Certainly, all right, Madam Chair, you can call me by my first name anytime. In front of me, I have the spending limit comparison first, so I'll just cover that one first. Okay. And at the top of your chart is the current law, which, as you know, goes by individual calendar year. Just for comparison purposes, we've broken out the total for the first 2 years, the second 2 years, and for the full cycle. The Senate position is that the first 2 years would be considered a non-election segment of the four-year election cycle, and the second 2 years would be considered the election segment. For the House, having an election every 2 years, there would be only an election segment. And so the Senate positions have separate amounts for each of those two segments, with the total for the 4 years in the right column under cycle total. And you can see the numbers. The totals for the governor over the 4 years, for example, is $5 million, broken out between $1,500,000 and $3,500,000. Now, the Senate numbers actually reflect communications that the Campaign Finance Board office and staff, and me in particular, have had with a number of people, both in the House and the Senate, as well as constitutional office candidates, related to what the appropriate levels or better levels for these numbers should be. And of course, that in the end is up to this committee to determine. But I would say that from the board's perspective, the numbers, at least the totals in the Senate version, more accurately reflect the input we've received, because the House version has the original numbers as the board proposed them without really any input. And so they're quite a bit higher in some cases. In particular, the Secretary of State and State Auditor suggested that both contribution and spending limits were so high that they would change the nature of those elections considerably. I will note,
and that, just to emphasize that, the lower amounts for the Secretary of State and the State Auditor to do that came at the recommendation of the current officeholders. They thought that other money, the other limits were just way too high and did not reflect, again, just to emphasize that, the nature of their offices as, well, I think, obviously, they're partisan because you have to run with a D or an R or an I or whatever. But they're not, they don't run to the level of partisanship that the governor and the AG do. And their public or the responsibilities that they have are not clearly as partisan as the governor and lieutenant governor, and to some degree the Attorney General. I mean, it's hard to imagine that a DFL state auditor and a Republican state auditor would differ in the standards that they apply to auditing local governments. I mean, that, you know, that just doesn't compute. I would hope. Well, with the scandal about the IRS, however, you know, one wonders. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, if I might make one additional comment regarding the Secretary of State and State Auditor numbers, particularly in the Senate bill, but this would apply to whatever position this committee comes out with, is that the numbers in the final version of the Senate bill came from my office after this input, and there was actually a miscommunication between me and the State Auditor and Secretary of State. And when I told them that the figure would be 400,000, I was talking about the election cycle, the total for the 4 years, and they thought I meant the total in the 2 year segment during which the election was held.
I see.
So they now feel that if we go with segments, that the figure in the election segment should be 400,000. Although if we go with a four-year cycle, my understanding is they're also comfortable with 400,000 because it mostly gets spent in the last year anyway.
So we may want to consider, if we do segments, we may want to consider an adjustment to that office, although it's not going to get as high as what was in the original bill.
Correct. And then the House position, as was pointed out, is still that there would be an election cycle total, and these are the numbers that the board originally proposed without input, and so they're quite higher than some of the other that are in the Senate bill. The contribution comparison is not much different between the House and Senate, except for the fact that the House divides it, or runs it over the four-year or two-year cycle, whereas the Senate breaks it up into segments. So for the governor and attorney general, the numbers are the same. They're slightly lower for Secretary of State, a total of 3,000 rather than 4,000. And for the Senate and House, they are decreased from what the original position was. Again, this is on feedback and also on comments that I heard as we went through various committees and hearings on these matters. So that would be, again, up to this committee to decide what the appropriate numbers are. Now, one of the reasons that the board preferred either an election cycle or an election segment approach to a calendar year approach is that it eliminates the need for candidates to try to burn down their election spending limit in the year before the election. Candidates use various ways, some completely acceptable and some more questionable, to use their spending limit in the off year before the election. Even with segments, there wouldn't be that necessity. They could decide when to do their spending, and same with an election cycle. However, if this committee decided it was best, we could still do the calendar year as well.
Any question about the differences in that?
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Representative Michael.
Just looking at the spending limits mm-hmm. and the Senate position, you did touch on this, but I am struck that the never mind, Madam Chair. No, yeah, I am. As I look at the Senate position on the Secretary of State, State Auditor, mm-hmm. The number is 400,000, which is up from 344 under current law.
Mm-hmm.
And as is the Attorney General, it's a fairly minor adjustment
mm-hmm.
in comparison to the House, Senate, and mm-hmm. Governor adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering why they've moved so little in comparison to all the other positions.
Well, perhaps Mr. Goldsmith can fill us in on, as I understand it, this was a recommendation coming from the current office holders, that they thought that those limits were fine, except that you just made a caveat that you think that they misunderstood the proposal with regard to the difference in the segment and the cycle. Is that correct?
We mutually misunderstood each other. Right. They thought that I was talking about 400,000 in whatever period the election occurs, whether it be the cycle or the segment. And I thought they were talking about the cycle. So in the Senate position, that would mean that the election segment total for Secretary of State and State Auditor, their recommendation would be that be $400,000 rather than $300,000.
Which would make it
total.
In the cycle total, it would be $500,000.
Unless the committee reduces the non-election segment. They weren't particularly concerned about the non-election segment. Their concern was that they think that during the period when there's an election, that $400,000 is an appropriate amount. They felt that $1,500,000 was far too high and would change the complexion of elections. Also, the staff research at the board office showed us that there's almost no independent spending involved in Secretary of State and State Auditor elections. So for that reason, it's not necessary that they have a very big increase.
The AG and the governor, lieutenant governor's races garners a whole lot more attention from outside sources. Is that correct?
Certainly true of the governor's race. To some extent, the AG, it's not prevalent. I think actually we'll see more outside spending in some House and Senate races when you add it all together, because they are, in fact, the policymakers.
Any other questions?
Oh, Madam Chair.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Goldsmith. But is the $600,000 elections segment from the Attorney General the correct amount? So is the 800 cycle total, or the Attorney General the amount that the office holder recommended?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, the Attorney General was didn't want to give a particular position. They were essentially comfortable, and I did speak with a high-level representative who had talked to the Attorney General. They were comfortable with what the committee would do. And I might add, they did feel that the $1.5 million was high.
Well, Representative Winkler, I think you're familiar with the electioneering differences, and we now looked at this. The two amendments, actually there were three amendments offered on the floor that passed. One was with regard to the, in the section dealing with the gift ban, and this was Senator Senjum's amendment, and essentially was trying to make the socializing comedy of the legislature more available by allowing members to go to an event that was sponsored by an outside source if an invitation was delivered at least 5 days before the event and was delivered to all members of the legislature, which would then say that those various receptions that we're invited to, Representative Winkler and I seldom go to any of them, and maybe he didn't go to any of them. I seldom go to them, but they do have generally on the bottom of the invitation that public officials are requested to pay the cost of whatever it is, $10, $20, $25, whatever. And Senator Senjum suggested that rule ought to be changed since it was passed in 1993. People have different attitudes toward that, and Senator Marty made some impassioned pleas about, if you're going to go to something, you ought to pay for it, and Senator Senjum made the argument that the benefits of being able to get together and know your colleagues, I believe I've met Representative Dean one time, and maybe we would have crossed paths and had good conversations at, do you go to those receptions?
A couple,
okay, maybe we, anyway, you get the point. And so it was, I think, a healthy discussion, and the amendment did go on. Senator Marty himself offered the amendment about disclosing the first dollar of a contribution from a lobbyist. And as I recall that argument, it was made also in light of the increased contribution limits, that if lobbyists are now able to give you more, that we should make the disclosure for them even more stringent. We can decide, House, whether you think that's a fair characterization and whether we should make that policy change. And we're certainly willing to listen to that. And then the third one had to do with, and I'm sure I'm going to get these proportions wrong, but if in a primary you won by less than 75% of the vote, and right now I think it's like 60% or something like that, that you could get that bump that's currently available for extra spending limits. And the argument made for that was, Or is that on your side?
That was on our side.
Yeah, okay.
But you're doing great.
Am I doing great for you guys? Okay. The argument is that even if you don't have a hotly contested primary, that most people would indeed still have to spend a goodly sum to make sure that there was no mischief in that primary, even if you did win 75-25, that justified the bump nowadays. And then the other one was one in the House, in the Senate, and it had to do with, Ms. Dangle, it was Senator Westrum's amendment, and it had to do with the disbursement of funds when a committee was terminating, as I recall. Is that correct? Could you explain that one a little bit more to us?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. You can find this on page R27, if you'd like to look at the language itself, Senate Section 47. Otherwise, it's on page 17, side-by-side summary. And basically, what it does here is increases the limit that a political party or dissolving political party can give to a Senate candidate in an election segment, and that goes from 10% to 15%, and I don't have the exact numbers, but I suspect Mr. Goldsmith would if he'd like those.
Would you like to comment on that provision?
Right. Under the Senate's new limits, contribution limits, if they were adopted, and it was on the premise that they would be adopted, that this amendment was offered, the contribution limits for the House over a four-year period would be $1,000 times two, or $2,000 from an individual. The party unit can give 10 times that much under the current law, which would then be $20,000 over 4 years. On the other hand, the Senate would be $500 in the non-election segment and $1,000 in the election segment for a total of $1,500, which would mean during that same 4 years, the party could only give $15,000 rather than $20,000. And so Senator Westrum's bill was to increase the multiplier for the Senate so that the amount the party could give to a Senate candidate would be the same as the amount they could give to a House candidate.
Madam Chair.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Goldsmith, just to clarify, the House member would have gone through two elections, however.
Right.
Isn't that correct?
That's correct. A House member goes through two elections in which they have to reach half as many people. A Senate goes through one election in which they have to reach twice as many people. So the actual number of votes that you have to get essentially is the same over the four-year period. I mean, that's the way the board has looked at it. Now, there are some differences because it costs more to do two mailings than one bigger mailing and so on, but that's an approximation.
I think those are the differences, and so we can keep talking.
There's at least one.
Is there one more? Okay. Representative
and maybe Mr. Gehring can point us to the right spot, but Representative Hansen on the floor added an amendment to add county commissioners and judges to the definition of public official for purposes of economic interest disclosure.
So, Madam Chair, we're on page R32, we'll side by side. Also, the summary is on page 20. There's a series of sections that sort of have stated to add judges and county commissioners to the definition of public official. And then there's some conforming changes that exempt judges from certain disclosures because they're already subject to disclosure. This is Representative Hansen's amendment on the House floor, and it adds his bill here. But the main substance of this article is that judges and county commissioners would be required to file a statement of that.
Representative Winkler, we're probably going to resist that amendment. You know, maybe a midpoint is to make that requirement for county commissioners and maybe even judges in the metropolitan area, but to go out to Monoman County and ask Monoman County commissioners, you know, what, 10,000 people in the country, in the county or something, on a really small smaller counties to go through the same hoops in terms of statements of economic interest. We've had a lot of pushback on that. But, you know, we're willing to listen, but there's a lot of pushback on it.
And, Madam Chair, I understand that there is some disagreement on that. Representative Hansen certainly feels strongly, and I can't really articulate any policy rationale for distinguishing between the difficulty of filling out an economic interest form in Monoman County versus Hennepin County.
I'm just reporting the traffic. Okay.
I understand. And if we're kind of identifying issues, mm-hmm. I know that some members in the House DFL side are very concerned about loosening the gift ban, mm-hmm. as was proposed in the Senate amendment. I don't know if Representative Doubt had any response to that from the Republican side.
Well, I think we might be open to it, but there's other areas we're more concerned about. So.
and there are ways of limiting that. So we'll keep talking. I don't know if we'll have another chance to meet today. And so what I'm going to do is just recess.
Okay.
In case we have conversations and could come back. But then otherwise, tomorrow you let me know what you'd like to do.
Very good.
Okay?
Thank
so
you.
We'll recess now, and I will we'll send around a message through the Senator Sieben's office because they have the wider listserv if we intend to come back. Okay? Committee stands in recess.
How are you?
Okay.